Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Therapists in the Wild. This is, if you can believe it, our last episode of season one.
Whew, my goodness. Yeah.
It's crazy. And I mean, we're really excited to be doing this final episode because we've gotten some questions from listeners about, like, how do I remember all of these skills, or how do I kind of put all of these skills together in the moment, which are certainly questions that are very, very common. And we wanted to give you an extra episode to get a sense of how we think about that and to give you a little bit of a roadmap moving forward.
It's absolutely one of the most common questions we get. You are not alone if you're feeling overwhelmed by the many skills we've taught and how to actually apply them in your life. I think we said this in the beginning of the season and we'll say it again. It's like learning a new language. And so now you've gotten the basics and now you need to form sentences. So
yeah,
it's still, for a lot of us, a long process, one that I would argue is never over. So hopefully this episode will be a helpful starting point. And then we're going to keep talking about ways to increase practice.
Absolutely. Yeah. And during our break, we're going to take a little bit of a break between season one and season two. And our season two is going to be a little bit different. It's very much inspired by some of the questions that you've asked us, some of the emails, just kind of special topics that people have expressed interest in learning more about. So we're going to have, you know, guests on and all of that. So we hope that you all will stick with us when we return in a few months. So please, in the meantime, don't forget to subscribe to us so that you'll get the alert when season two does begin. And like we always say, we really appreciate you continuing to rate and review us just so that more people can keep finding us and catching up on these skills.
Yeah, this season break will be a great opportunity to start from the beginning and get all of the skills before diving into the special topics that Molly was talking about. And then finally, reminder to follow us on social media at Therapists in the Wild, Instagram and Facebook, and at Therapists Wild on Twitter. We plan to keep posting during our season break, and we've really loved sort of building up our social media community. So if you want to stay up to date with skills, be sure to follow us. And as a little bonus, if you post a screenshot of you listening to the podcast on your Instagram story, we will repost you. It makes us so happy to see that, to see you listening, and just brings us so much joy. So please let us know about it. And of course, as Molly just mentioned, we are taking season two topic ideas mostly from emailers. So please keep emailing us at therapistinthewild@gmail.com. We really love engaging with you there. And please keep the ideas coming because we're really in the creative brainstorming phase at this point. So we would really love your input.
Yeah, totally. And we want to make this podcast as useful for you as possible. Please, you know, send us your thoughts, your suggestions so that we can better address the questions and concerns that are going on in your own lives.
Yeah.
So I know we have a lot to get into today, but before we get into that, I just wanted to share, we were talking about radical acceptance last week and something came up this week in my work world where I noticed somebody was not radically accepting something and kind of the consequences of that. So I felt like it was just too perfect of an opportunity to not bring it up in this episode.
Okay, let's hear it.
So I was in a meeting earlier this week and somebody in the meeting was talking about how she had some issue in her office and somebody was coming in to fix it and they weren't wearing a mask. And, you know, obviously COVID cases are on the rise, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. And also it's just the policy that everybody should be wearing a mask on the campus. Mm-hmm. And when we were talking about like how she could have kind of asked that person to put on a mask, she had said, well, they should have known that it was a policy to wear a mask and they shouldn't have come into the office without wearing a mask. So I shouldn't have had to say that to the person.
Right. So basically, by refusing to accept reality that this had in fact happened, the person was stuck because there was no problem solving to be had around how to prevent something like this from happening in the future, which in the COVID world, these types of situations happen all the time. And so it's actually like prevents skill building, it seems like, in this scenario.
Exactly. Yeah. I thought it was a great example of like that willfulness that we talked about. And again, understandable, like maybe that's true that people quote unquote should be following the rules set by an organization. But at the same time, like we've also been talking about, everything is caused.
Right.
And in other ways, it couldn't have happened any other way than the way that it did. And so, you know, it really made me think about what we talked about in episode 24, when we were going through the specific steps of how to practice radical acceptance. Mm. And that the first step is really observing that you are fighting reality and kind of noticing that that way of thinking, the shoulds, are getting in the way of acting effectively.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're saying, you know, maybe the person should have, it's like, what does that actually mean? Right. What it should mean, what you're actually saying, or what this person was actually saying, was, I wish this person had remembered to wear their mask, or, you know, given the guidelines, I would have thought that the person would wear their mask. Yeah. Or, you know, this person, I feel, broke the rules, made a mistake, did something dangerous, and it happened.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, that you bring up the should, because I feel like the more that I learn about, you know, psychology, and the deeper that we get into this field, that word doesn't mean much to me anymore. It's almost like when you say like taco, 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 taco.
It loses like, all meanings. No meaning.
Yeah. That started to happen to me with the word should.
That's so funny. Maybe our listeners will have that same experience over time.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, thank you for sharing that example. I think that's a helpful way to just, you know, remember what radical acceptance can look like in everyday life, or I suppose non-acceptance in this case. And it's just helpful to be aware of, whether it's in yourself or in other people, to kind of understand the problems that it causes and the ways that it keeps us stuck.
In our episode today, we're going to be talking about all of the different skills that we've taught on the podcast. So we want to do a quick overview of all of the modules and the skills that we've taught so that they can be fresh in your mind as we go through them today.
Yes. Okay. So way back in spring, we started by talking about mindfulness, which really, these are the foundational DBT skills for reducing suffering and increasing enjoyment of life, really by increasing awareness of the present moment, because the present moment is all we have. We have no control over what has already happened or what will happen in the future. So we talked about what mindfulness is, what it looks like, how to practice it non-judgmentally, effectively, and when mindfully. We talked about getting into your wise mind when you notice that your emotions or being overly reasonable is kind of ruling your actions. And really the point of all of this is, in terms of ways that mindfulness is the foundation for other skills, because of course, in and of itself, it's helpful to practice mindfulness. And mindfulness is so foundational to DBT because it's really the starting point for all other skills. It's increasing that awareness so that you know, okay, something's going on here. I need to use other skills in this moment to either change the situation or accept what I'm going through.
Mm-hmm. Love that overview of mindfulness. That was very comprehensive.
Thank you.
Yeah, it makes me think of the metaphor that we've used on the podcast before about how if you bring your car into the shop and you just say like, something's wrong, fix it, you know, people are not going to know what to do. It's going to take a really long time to figure it out. And you're probably not going to get the help that you need. Whereas if you come in and say, I need an oil change, or my brakes are squeaking, you know, they'll know what to do about that. So it's we can think of mindfulness as kind of helping you identify the problem, or what's happening, or doesn't even necessarily need to be a problem, just to notice what's actually happening in this moment, which is a necessary first step to then figuring out what are you going to do about it.
I love that. I love that explanation.
We taught the idea of how to recognize the different components of an emotion, So how to recognize, you know, the interpretations that you're making, the physiological sensations, the urges that you have, and how all of that leads into what we would call shame or fear or guilt or whatever the emotion is. And then once you've kind of identified that emotion, we talked about some different skills to use in order to change how you're feeling if that's your goal. So opposite action is obviously a fan favorite.
And a favorite of ours.
Yeah. What are some other ones?
So to kind of change how you're feeling in the moment, again, if that's your goal, could be check the facts, which can kind of help you determine, all right, is what I'm feeling, does it fit the facts here? Would it be effective to act on this emotion? If not, opposite action.
Mm-hmm.
If so, problem solving, right? So we gave the example of sometimes feeling guilty is very justified. And so solving the problem, making an apology, something like that would make sense in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
We also talked about just kind of riding the wave of whatever you're experiencing, the mindfulness of current emotion skill, which can also be applied to thoughts. And that's just, you know, sometimes the best way to change how you're feeling is just to let it pass and not engage with it at all, just to experience it without judgment, and not to avoid it, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then lastly, and as part of the emotion regulation module, we talked about skills to prevent what we call emotional vulnerability or vulnerability to emotion mind. And so those are the please skills. So if you remember back, it's about regulating your eating behavior, exercise, sleep, all those types of kind of basic biological functioning type things that can increase our vulnerability to emotion mind. So that if we encounter maybe the same exact situation when we're hungry and tired, we're going to react to that a lot more intensely than we would if we were well-rested, well-fed, exercised, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And the last thing I'll say about emotion regulation that I hope is kind of a take-home message is that all emotions, according to DBT, I think according to us, are okay, right? Whatever you're feeling is makes sense given the circumstances that led up to that moment. It's okay to be feeling however you're feeling. And it's then worthwhile to say, all right, would acting on this emotion be effective for me and my goals? If not, what can I do about it? That's really the simple message.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So then we got into interpersonal effectiveness. That's all those lovely acronyms, dear man.
So many acronyms in that module. Oh my gosh.
Yep. Dear man, give fast. Which are skills to help you get what you want while maintaining the relationship and or your self-respect. So kind of having some structure for having some difficult conversations, potentially, just really to maximize effectiveness, to increase the likelihood that the outcome will be what you want it to be.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I think is most helpful about the interpersonal effectiveness module is just trying to take the time to actually think about what your goal is in in a given interpersonal interaction. So is the goal to meet my objective? Is the goal to maintain this relationship? Or is the goal to protect my self-respect? And maybe it's all of those things, and then you can kind of rank them as we talked about. But having that in mind, I think, can be a helpful guide when you're having conversations.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then lastly, you probably all remember this because it's so recent, but we've been talking about distress tolerance skills. So, and like we said, those are broken up into two different categories. First is crisis survival skills, and the second is reality acceptance skills.
Right. So how to kind of get through the moment without making it worse, not necessarily trying to make it better, but just kind of riding it out until you can kind of calm down enough to be able to use other skills effectively. Mm-hmm. So that's the crisis survival part. And then radical acceptance, we just did it. Kind of how to really reduce suffering by accepting, acknowledging what the reality is rather than being stuck in fighting what it isn't.
Mm-hmm. All right. Whew, that was a
whirlwind.
Whirlwind going through all those skills, 24 episodes in just a couple minutes.
Yeah.
So now what we're going to do is we're going to try to introduce just a few general scenarios and then talk about how to apply the skills that we just talked about from all of these different modules to specific moments within each scenario. So you can get a sense, almost imagining yourself in the scenario and then how you could apply different skills.
Yeah, and the reason we're doing this is really to get at this question of, okay, so I have all of the individual tools and now how do I put them together to, you know, create something meaningful in the moment. So what do I do when I'm in the moment? I don't remember any of the skills because they're all blurring together at once. Actually, Molly, what we're doing right now is in and of itself a DBT skill, which is cope ahead. This just occurred to me in this very moment.
I did not know what you were going to say. You said this is, we're doing a DBT skill right now. I was like, oh God, I hope she doesn't ask me. Which one?
A little light bulb just went off for me. Because, you know, I think what we're trying to model here, if you have a situation that you know is coming up that produces fear, anxiety, you know, you think it might produce sadness, anger, whatever it is, that's maybe an unwanted or uncomfortable emotion. One way to handle it is by coming up with in your mind or writing down on a piece of paper, like which skills you want to use and potentially in which order. And so we're going to do that right now. We're going to kind of create some playbooks and help you try to imagine how you might pull different skills together and use them in real time.
Okay, I love it. Right. And quick reminder, as we go through all of these, if you find yourself in one of these situations and can't remember anything we talked about in this episode, do not worry. You can always use your crisis survival skills as the first step if you're at that skills breaking point and you can't think straight, and then you can return to thinking about other skills.
Yeah. And also just to share, and then I promise we'll get into it. We came up with the scenarios in advance, but we didn't come up with the cope ahead plan in advance. So the reason we did that is because we really want to model for you, like what a brainstorming session with yourself or a friend, a skills buddy might look like. So we're just going to kind of spitball and like give each other different skills ideas and see how it goes.
Okay. So our first scenario is imagining someone, which we can relate to this person, who's always kind of waiting for the next thing. Maybe somebody who's saying to themselves like, well, I'll be happy once the pandemic is over, once I have a new job, once I get a boyfriend, girlfriend, once I'm married, once I have a kid, once it's the weekend, all those types of things. And those thoughts leading to feelings of kind of like, oh, like misery and dread for being in the moment that you're in right now and not being in this future moment that you imagine will be so much better.
Yeah. And it's almost a way to avoid or escape the pain of the current moment. Like, well, I'm feeling really miserable right now. So let me just imagine a time, say when the pandemic is over, I just won't have to deal with this thing anymore. And then my life will be perfect. So it's real emotional avoidance, I think.
Yeah. It's very tempting.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever do this, Molly?
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, I'm more aware of it now, but certainly it still comes up and was definitely something that I did a lot in the past, you know, where I would think, I remember even in high school being like, well, maybe when I go to college, all my problems will go away and I'll feel, you know, everything will kind of change. Mm-hmm. And then I remember getting into college and being like, really actually shocked that my life didn't just change dramatically when that happened.
Mm-hmm. Right. Or even in those moments, I think we've maybe talked about this in a past episode, like maybe the moment you get in is really exciting and then you acclimate and it becomes your life and then a new set of problems and painful emotions come up. So yeah, I can absolutely relate to this too. I'll admit I experience it a lot right now with the pandemic, just thinking, all right, well, you know, whenever this is over. And what's so difficult about it is that, of course, we don't have an end date, right? X, Y, and Z will just sort of fall into place. And, you know, I think this really lends itself to the first skill, which is just that, like, this sort of mindset that we're describing is very unmindful, right? It's very, it's very focused on the future, when in fact we are not in the future, we are in this moment. So mm-hmm. I think mindfulness is the skill here.
Mm-hmm. And if we were to even get more specific than that, like how to practice mindfulness when you notice these thoughts, I mean, I guess the first step is noticing the thoughts, mm-hmm. observing that you are having the thought, I'll be happy once. Mm-hmm. And maybe not even necessarily trying to get rid of that thought because we can't control our thoughts, but just noticing and being aware of the fact that, oh, there's that thought that I'll be happy in the future.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I think mindfulness of current thought is applicable here. Also mindfulness of current emotion. You know, it reminds me of when we spoke about this in the episode and talked about how sometimes if you're just ruminating uncontrollably, there might be some emotion that you're trying to avoid. And I would imagine, or I know when I have moments like this, it's because I don't really want to acknowledge how I'm feeling in that moment because I don't like how I'm feeling. And if I could just sort of sit there, observe the sensations in my body, observe the thoughts that are going through my mind, try to put a label on that and say, okay, I'm feeling sad right now. Let me just feel sad and sit with that for 90 seconds and then see how I feel after that.
Right. And the benefit of doing that is that once you acknowledge how you're actually feeling, because you're not avoiding it anymore, and you sit with that feeling using mindfulness, then you can start to think about, okay, like I feel really bored, or I feel really sad, or I feel like I have nothing to look forward to. What can I do about that? Can I use any emotion regulation strategies or skills to maybe figure out, like, can I change this? Can I change the moment? Can I use some maybe problem solving of like, okay, if I can sit with this feeling of boredom, let's say, and recognize that the problem here is that I don't have anything to do all weekend. Mm-hmm. Okay. Like maybe we can do some problem solving and try to figure out if that can change.
Yes. I love that. I'm trying to think of what other emotion regulation skills or even, you know, if that makes you feel really distressed, like acknowledging the boredom or the sadness, maybe a little self-soothe would be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Having some compassion for yourself when you notice like, oh, sitting in this moment is actually really uncomfortable. Like, how can I extend some kindness and compassion and try to soothe myself while recognizing that this is really tough in this moment?
And what you're describing kind of sounds to me like self-validation. Mm. Like, you know, I'm, let's use the pandemic example. I'm bored at home and it's hard. This is hard, right? And it's okay to be feeling this way.
I think that goes a long way,
yeah.
Especially like we've talked about in previous episodes, if you're feeling invalidated by your environment, by other people in your life, but even if not, you know, you might just invalidate yourself in your own mind. Mm-hmm. So making a conscious effort to try to find what is valid, what does make sense about the fact that I'm struggling in this moment, mm-hmm. can do a lot to actually regulate your emotion.
Yeah.
Make you feel a little bit better.
Yeah.
The last point I want to make about this one is like the idea, I guess, of dialectics, right? Like there's wanted and unwanted aspects of everything in life. So you could think about, okay, I'll be happy when I move to a new city. Well, sure, maybe there are aspects of moving to a new city that would make you happy. And mm-hmm. that was the end, right?
Yeah.
And there are aspects of moving to a new city that might be lonely, that might be challenging. You know, there's always that like good, bad kind of balance there. And so recognizing that in your mind, if you're making something into being this perfect, ideal future scenario, it's probably a little unrealistic. So how can you kind of balance that out using dialectics?
Yeah, I love that point, right? Like once I get a boyfriend or a girlfriend, all my problems will be solved. Well, yeah, Yes, some will be potentially. And there will be aspects about it that are difficult and painful. And yeah, I think that's such an important thing to keep in mind when having these types of thoughts, is that nothing is all one way, nothing is all one thing. And I think that can also increase, you know, gratitude for the moment, for the present moment, if possible.
Yeah, because you might realize, like, I'm feeling like this present moment really sucks and the future moment's really going to be amazing. But if you almost balance both of those things out, it's like, okay, well, maybe there is something, you know, positive that I'm not observing in this moment.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah. So I guess just to kind of wrap up this example, this is going to look really different for everyone and in different scenarios. And just to give kind of a sample playbook here, to wrap up what we just talked about, you know, you notice these very future oriented kind of unmindful thoughts, like always waiting for the next thing to be better. So the first step, of course, is just noticing that, using that those mindfulness skills, kind of redirecting your attention to the present moment. Then potentially just sitting with that, kind of noticing the thoughts, noticing the emotion you're experiencing, labeling it, either letting it pass or doing something about it through problem solving, through maybe self-soothing, self-validating, and then just kind of keeping in mind that nothing is black and white, and that, you know, there are aspects of this moment that are, you know, worth noticing, potentially being grateful for if possible, and just kind of trying to apply that dialectical mindset.
Beautiful recap.
Oh, thank you. Okay, let's talk about another scenario that I think comes up a lot. It's a pretty universal problem, I think. And again, we're keeping these examples pretty broad because we hope that each of you will be able to relate to some aspect of what we're talking about. So the general topic here is anxiety getting in the way of dating life, you know, of the romantic realm. I think this plays out in many different ways for many different people. And we'll just give a couple of examples. I'm thinking about, you know, maybe you start dating someone and there's so much anxiety about it not working out, about saying the wrong thing and pushing the other person away. And then that kind of becoming like a self-fulfilling prophecy where it then kind of leads to problems in the relationship and, you know, either does push the person away or just creates so much anxiety that it's just very unpleasant.
Mm. Yeah. And along those lines, like maybe having this idea in your mind of what you think the relationship is, or how, like, almost projecting what you want onto the other person as opposed to paying attention to what's actually happening in front of you, which we all do, mm-hmm. you know, all the time in dating or just in life. And so that can probably lead to a lot of disappointment when somebody doesn't act the way that you think they quote unquote should. And then a lot of anxiety.
Yeah. I mean, I think like from what a lot of people talk about, like with dating apps, for example, like maybe you'll have a pretty promising or exciting conversation with someone on an app and set a date with the person, and then like it doesn't work out. And it's exactly as you just said, Molly. It's like, it's the disappointment of, oh, I had it in my head that this was going to go a certain way. And now I need to kind of get over that. And I don't want it to be that way. Like I want to go out with this person.
Oh, I think it's a very relatable example, whether you apply it to dating or someone you're trying to become friends with that, mm-hmm. you know, maybe doesn't want to, that doesn't, isn't being as responsive as you are to them, or be a job that you want.
I was just thinking that, yeah, it could be a job and you want it to work out. You start picturing yourself there and then you're not hearing back.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing with this one that's showing up for me is recognizing that there's disappointment here. Mm-hmm. You know, it was fun. This is actually reminding me. This is a random story, but it seems somewhat relevant here. I got Chinese food with my sister a few weeks ago, and we tried this new place that she was really excited about trying. And then we got the food and we like set the table and tried to make it into this, you know, we were going to have like a nice dinner together. And then when we got the food and we both tried it, it was absolutely terrible. Some of the worst Chinese food I've ever had.
Oh no.
And we were both like, oh, look, it's not bad. You know, We were both like trying to kind of make the best of it. And eventually I was just like, all right, like, this is terrible Chinese food. Like, this is really disappointing. We were looking forward to this and it sucks.
Yeah.
And then we kind of started laughing about it and it changed the moment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm having so many thoughts right now. I think first of all, what you're describing is reality acceptance. And I think, you know, particularly with like romantic relationships, with kind of when someone is behaving in a way that you don't want them to be behaving, it's so easy to just come up with all of these reasons, like why it's not actually the reality, you know, like, oh, maybe this person, you know, I mean, there's a million things, right? There's a million, like maybe it's going to work out and the person will come around, or what did I do? Maybe I did something wrong, or just like, just so many different ways that this plays out. And really what the only reality is, it didn't work out the way I wanted it to. And I'm disappointed.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that's true in that moment. Just like with the Chinese food, right? It's like, you know, you could have tried to pretend to enjoy it. You could have, I don't know, done a million other things. And the reality is, it didn't taste the way you wanted it to. And you felt disappointed and sad about that.
Yeah. And it's reminding me of our conversation about like that pain versus suffering, you know, the pain of the moment is okay, I like this person and maybe they don't like me back, or maybe it's not even that they don't like you. Maybe they just got off the apps, got back together with their ex, like whatever, whatever the scenario is, there's that feeling of pain and disappointment, and that suffering piece gets added onto it when we start making up stories in our heads about why things happen or what this means. I'll never find somebody, and or I did something so horrible that turned this person away, all that kind of stuff.
And I would just add, I think kind of when you're engaging in this self-talk, just be really cautious about judgments, whether it's judging the other person, whether it's judging yourself. You know, I think it's so easy to have these thoughts in these moments, like, well, I'm not this enough, you know, I'm not attractive enough, I'm not smart enough. And here's where really just stating the facts is going to lead to that reduction in emotional suffering, right? It's like, it's not I'm unattractive enough. It's this person didn't respond when I asked them out on a second date, right? Like those two things are very different.
Yeah, this has checked the facts written all over it. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you're dating somebody and then they don't get back to you, it's natural for the mind to make up a lot of interpretations about why that is, to try to make sense of it. That's what our minds do. They try to understand things and make sense of things. Mm-hmm. And depending on your background, your learning history, your mind might not always have the kindest interpretation of why that happened. You know, it might kind of always end up somehow being your fault, or being because of some weakness or something in yourself. So checking the facts there about like, is this an interpretation that I'm making, or is this actually a fact?
Yeah. Yeah. And then finally, you know, I don't think we can talk about relationships without mentioning interpersonal effectiveness. And, you know, thinking about a scenario maybe where it's a new relationship and, there's some anxiety there, understandably, and maybe you invite the person to hang out and they say no, and then your mind just jumps to all of these possible scenarios. You know, one option is just to be pretty direct and say, hey, you know, what's going on here? I hope we can Like, I hope we can keep hanging out, you know, and use a Dear Man or whatever it is. Using lots of give skills if you're prioritizing the relationship, you know, when you're doing that.
Yeah, I love that. Remembering your priorities, I think, is key here, and taking into consideration the factors and like the facts of the situation. So like, for example, if you try to make plans with somebody and then they don't show up when you make the plans, like, is that a one-time thing? Okay, maybe it makes sense then to prioritize the relationship if you still like this person and use a lot of give skills and just try to have that direct communication with them. However, if it's something that maybe is a pattern that's happening over and over and over again, and it's starting to make you feel really bad about yourself, it's starting to take a toll on your self-respect, even if you do still like the person, it might make sense then to use some of those fast skills when having this, you know, the conversation could be similar, but you could kind of prioritize that self-respect in the conversation if it is a pattern.
Yeah. And I think inherent in that, or before doing that, it's really about checking in with yourself about values in relationships, you know, like how do I want my romantic partner, or, you know, whoever it is that you're dating, to act toward me? How do I want to feel and be treated? How do I want to be as a partner in this, you know, relationship? And like that, I think that pre-work is necessary to then determine like what you want to ask for and how assertive you want to be, and kind of if you want to, yeah, kind of where you want to draw those boundaries.
Mm-hmm. And along those lines, checking in with yourself about how you feel when the other person acts in the ways that they're acting, and actually validating those feelings too. Not saying like, oh, well, I don't have the right to feel that way, or they probably didn't mean it, or, you know, noticing, acknowledging, making space for those feelings, and then making a conscious decision about how you want to respond to them effectively.
Yeah.
So to give a little playbook for this one, this one's a little bit more complicated.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Where do you think it makes sense to start?
I mean, again, I think first step is always mindfulness. So noticing what those thoughts and feelings are, how it might be getting in the way. I'm going to add one here. I think that emotion mind can be really powerful, particularly related to romantic anxiety. So probably getting into wise mind before doing anything else. And then depending on the situation, you know, it's, I think a big theme here is noticing what the emotion actually is and making room for that, rather than just like getting so caught up in those thoughts and self-judgments that it makes you act in ways that you might later regret. So really just kind of checking in with yourself. What am I actually feeling here? Is it disappointment? Is it maybe a little sadness or grief? And then kind of doing whatever comes next based on the situation. It might just be radically accepting, okay, like this isn't working out the way I want it to. Maybe I need to move on here.
And if that's the case, maybe you can do some self-soothe, something like that, to take care of yourself. If you're just sitting with disappointment and you've been sitting with it for a while and feels like too much.
Yeah. And this also isn't a time to radically accept something that hasn't happened yet. Right. So it's important to kind of think, all right, is my interpretation that this is over, or is this actually the facts? So check the facts on that, potentially have a direct conversation with the person using the Dear Man give fast skills. Think about how you want to be treated and where you draw the line, and go from there.
Sounds so simple.
Just do it. It'll be so easy.
So our last example that we're going to give today is about anger, which is an emotion that many people struggle with.
And a lot of people have asked us about, actually, because I think it's a difficult emotion to experience, to express, and maybe not one that, at least in the society that we live in, is taught, you know, to kids, like this is how anger is responded to effectively. So I do think it can be kind of confusing for people.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with that. You know, and I think in the work that we do, we often see people that experience anger related to thinking about how their life could have been maybe different or better somehow if they didn't grow up in the environment that they grew up in, maybe if people had different families or more validation growing up, or even if it's not childhood related, maybe like if I didn't go through this traumatic event, mm-hmm. You know, then things would be better for me, basically. Mm-hmm. And being angry about the fact that that things happened the way that they did.
Yeah, this is such a tough one and a really common one. And, you know, even as you're talking about this, what I'm thinking is, okay, is that anger or is it something else? And this goes back to our conversation about primary versus secondary emotions and how a lot of times, based on the ways in which we have grown up, our learning histories, we kind of get taught unintentionally or intentionally to really quickly avoid certain emotions and express them kind of as something else, right? That's the primary, secondary emotion thing. And so a lot of times what this really is grief that mm-hmm. things didn't turn out the way that we wanted them to, or that we, you know, some of us were dealt a pretty painful deck of cards in certain areas of life. And it's really, really hard to experience that as grief for all kinds of reasons. And so a lot of times we experience that as anger toward a specific person, toward, you know, ourselves, when really what it is grief and sadness, I think.
Yeah. And in DBT, there's this concept of like inhibited grieving too, where when we don't allow ourselves to grieve what needs to be grieved, it can lead to a lot of emotional dysregulation mm-hmm. and probably, you know, like we're talking about now, probably a lot of anger.
Yeah.
So this, I think, you know, I think it is clearly a radical acceptance type of scenario where, and this is radical acceptance is always challenging, I would say most of the time. And in these types of situations, it's probably the most challenging when you have to accept things like this.
Yeah. And just even thinking about like a precursor to practicing the radical acceptance skills, like I know for a lot of people, these are some of the most painful moments of life when thinking, either when just like having thoughts about it, how you wish something had been different, or maybe you have a memory or someone says something that cues you to have these thoughts, and it can be so easy to just like get really, really angry and lash out or do something that you regret. And so I think crisis survival skills for a lot of people are necessary as a first step here. So just to kind of remind you through this example of what those are, you know, grab that ice pack or a bowl of water and dunk your head in it. You know, if you feel like you're at that level 100 where like you just kind of can't do anything else until you've calmed down. Maybe it's like doing a little bit of intense exercise or just some deep breathing. Just some way to kind of get yourself to the point where you can even do some of this harder work.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you said that.
And so then that doing that process of radical acceptance, like Molly described, I also think maybe this is something we didn't even talk about. You know, after you've turned the mind toward accepting reality, you might still feel, well, I guess the point here really is to feel that grief. And so then what? Like what could happen next after you've acknowledged the grief that you're feeling?
After you've acknowledged the grief that you're feeling and kind of sat with that grief and allowed and made space for it, like we talked about with the willingness, mm-hmm. half smile, willing hands. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the skills that we talked, or one of the steps within radical acceptance from last week was opposite action.
Yeah.
And kind of acting in the way that you would act if you had accepted what the reality of the situation was.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that could probably look a lot of different ways depending on the situation, but I would imagine that would be a very helpful step when you're ready for it. Like, that's not something I think that can be rushed. It could probably feel extremely invalidating and maybe counterproductive if it was something that was done prior to you being ready for that. But I think it could kind of help with some of that meaning making that we talked about in the last episode.
Yeah, I totally agree. And then the last thing that I'll add is just, you know, we talk about a lot how important it is to not avoid our primary emotions and just to kind of notice whatever it is that's going on. And at the same time, I think this is a situation where it could turn into just sitting around all day, constantly trying to radically accept and then turn the mind back to acceptance. And, you know, I do think at a certain point, it's probably helpful to think about like, okay, what do I need to get done today? What's effective here? Yes, I need to radically accept. And I may need to do that like over and over throughout the day. And how can I also like maybe use a little bit of opposite action to start living a life in line with my life worth living goals, you know, because yes, I mean, this situation may be really, really different than I would have liked it to be. And here I am. And so how can I live and move on and try to, you know, achieve a life worth living now?
I'm so glad you brought that point up. And I think it really lends itself well to the, again, the idea of dialectics, where you can both feel this grief and have that, make space for that and carry that inside you while at the same time practicing opposite action, acting effectively, going to that meeting that you need to go to, mm-hmm. calling the person that you need to call, picking up your phone, all that kind of stuff. But it's not like, oh, if I'm going to do those things and I need to push this grief aside, it's like you can make, you know, try and work on increasing the willingness to make space for whatever feelings are there while acting effectively and doing what needs to be done in the moment.
Right. Yeah. You can go to that meeting while feeling grief.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I feel like a theme that's kind of come up through this episode has been, well, not surprisingly, noticing what you're feeling as being like a very, very crucial first step. And not pushing it away, not avoiding it, not trying to control it in the moment. Like, again, there are strategies and skills you can use later, you know, in a second to figure out, okay, do I want to change this? But the first step is really just, what am I feeling right now?
Mm-hmm. Right. And validating that and, you know, not trying to get rid of it. Knowing that you're feeling it for a reason. You don't need to dive into the reason. You can just notice it and say, all right, this is what's going on here. Now what do I do? Mm-hmm. And maybe the answer is nothing, or maybe it's something.
Mm-hmm. And if the answer is nothing, then that's maybe acceptance, mm-hmm. Mindfulness acceptance, which again can lead to change inside yourself, or maybe it will be kind of more external type things that you try to change.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you recapped the themes here. It's interesting that we didn't plan for that to be the theme, and yet, and yet it emerged, and it's probably because of, you know, noticing and being mindful of emotions and accepting them for what they are, and then deciding what to do next is a foundational part of DBT, and something that we hope you'll really take away from season one of the podcast.
Absolutely. We want to leave you with one more thing before we end this episode, which is how to remember all of these freaking acronyms and these skills. Like, there's just so many of them. Uh-huh. You know, we've gotten questions of like, how am I ever supposed to remember all of these skills?
Yeah. And I think the first step here, when you're having that thought, is to validate it, to use some self-validation. Yes, makes sense that I'm not exactly sure how to approach this. This is a lot. It's kind of like learning a new language. So remember to self-validate and feel about it however you are feeling. And now let's move on to some practical tips that we've, you know, found to work, and let you know also that this is something we are continuing to think about, and we're going to you know, brainstorm in our season break, like, how can we leverage the community that, you know, the Instagram community, things like that to sort of help help you practice. So it's a work in progress, and we'll talk a little bit about it now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've been thinking about your analogy of like learning DBT is kind of like learning a new language, right? So if you think about it like that, what do you need to do when you're trying to learn a new language? You know, you could listen to a podcast, 25 mm-hmm. episodes of a podcast in a different language, and you would have more familiarity with the language, but you wouldn't be fluent.
Right.
So it requires practice. And what that could look like, it might look like actually studying, like having the skills binder, which you can buy, you know, you can buy for yourself, or you can probably find a lot of the worksheets online, and actually just like looking them over whenever you have a free second and trying to familiarize yourself with the skills just by repetition.
Yeah. You can write down all of the skills, like make a cheat sheet and maybe take a picture of it to have on your phone or hang on your bedroom wall.
Along those lines, you could make a cheat sheet for yourself based on your target behavior. So if there's a specific issue in your life that you're trying to apply DBT skills to, you can kind of make that emotion regulation playbook or whatever set of skills playbook for yourself, make a little flow chart or just write down the names of the main skills that you want to make sure to use, and then keep that somewhere, take a picture of it, whatever, keep it somewhere that you can access at all times.
Yeah. And just want to validate how difficult it can be to make your own playbook. And so that's where having a buddy, you know, a skills buddy that you can talk through different scenarios with and make that playbook, make that cope ahead plan. Obviously, if you can access a DBT therapist, that would be ideal. That person can certainly help you with this. You know, if there's someone in your life who you want to share the podcast with, and then you can talk about these skills together. Those are other ways.
Yeah. Or even like joining, if you are on social media, you know, following DBT accounts. On Reddit, there's a great DBT self-help Reddit, and they have a ton of great resources. And I think even just like browsing those things and having them kind of pop up on your feed can help remind you of some of the skills that you might not use. I mean, I have to admit, even just doing this podcast, I was like, oh, there's this skill that I, you know, I have my favorite skills, my go-to skills, and sometimes I forget about some of the other ones. So just having any opportunity to like come into contact with the names of other skills, even if it's kind of unintentional, can just help jog your memory about other skills to use as well.
Yeah. I love that suggestion. And again, you know, we're going to keep brainstorming how we can continue to support this process of learning a very difficult new language.
Yes. And our podcast is not going anywhere, so you can always re-listen to these episodes as many times as you need to, you know, just let it soak in.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's wrap up. End of season one. I can hardly believe it. You know, we really want to end by thanking you for your support, for your engagement throughout the season, for sharing it with friends, colleagues, loved ones, writing us reviews, asking us questions, you know, really making us think about these skills in a totally new way. I just think, you know, we really never imagined when we started this what it would turn into. Yeah, it's been an amazing experience that I don't think words can even begin to describe.
Yeah, I would agree with all of that. And I feel immense gratitude to you, Liza, for going through this journey with me and kind of creating this together. And of course, to all of our listeners for, you know, for being interested in this and for taking the time to listen to these episodes and learn these skills and for being so committed to your own growth in your own life that you take the time out of your days to learn these skills and work on yourself and being more skillful and more effective, which is something that just like you, we're also working on. So we see that and we appreciate you. And we are very, very excited to begin our planning stage for season two. So we can come back with even more ideas, suggestions, all that stuff. coming in a few months.
Yeah, I mean, obviously right back at you in terms of feeling so grateful that we've gone on this journey together, that we have just like found this incredibly rewarding way to do what we love and share it. You know, as we mentioned, neither of us ever dreamed of doing anything like this when we entered the field, and it's just been so incredibly rewarding. Not only one of the most rewarding things we've done in our careers, but our lives.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you all for making that happen.
So until next season, stay skillful, everyone.